Blog Talk Radio.
Have you been pressured to have your child vaccinated? Are you aware of the risks and dangers involved? Today's guest provides clear evidence that all is not rosy in the vaccination world. This discussion just might save you or your child's life. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healer, and somatic body psychotherapist, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the book, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel, Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of Healing Through Love seminars, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me Relationship System, and the upcoming 30 Days of Soul Love. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Today, I'm speaking with Kent Heckenlively, a force to be reckoned with. He will debate you, and I am pretty sure he will win the debate, about a really serious, very important, and timely topic. He is the father of a child who was stricken with autism after being vaccinated, and his son remains unable to speak. His current book, Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism, is the outgrowth of research he did for his previous co-authored book, Plague, in which he searched for the truth about human retroviruses, chronic fatigue syndrome, autism, and other diseases. In his books, he uses his exacting skills as a scientist and an attorney to demonstrate how the Centers for Disease Control, CDC, deliberately chose to inaccurately report test results that showed a distinct correlation between the vaccine and increased autism statistics, and how a lack of courage by those who could have spoken up in the early 2000s when indicators began to surface, but instead they remained silent or deliberately the truth, this has resulted in an entire generation of autism-disabled children and a fast-rising tide of more of this. So I'm delighted to be speaking with you, Kent Heckenlively.
Thanks a lot for having me, Dr. Goodstone. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, this is so important, but I would love you to share with our listeners how you got started with this whole topic. I know you were a scientist.
Well, you know,
what were you studying? Tell us about it.
I'm a science teacher, and I was an attorney for 15 years. So I've been a science teacher for 10 years. I was a lawyer for 15 years. And, you know, my wife's in medicine. She is a speech therapist, so she works at the rehab facility of a local hospital. She worked in one hospital for 25 years and is at another one. She's been for about past 2 years. So, you know, we're just kind of like typical Americans. And so when we had our kids, we followed the vaccine schedule. Now, my daughter went off of breast milk when she was about 6 months old, and then a couple weeks later she got her shots, and then about 3 or 4 weeks after that we noticed the first little head bobs, which are indicative of the seizure disorder, which she was diagnosed with a couple weeks later, and then or a couple months later, and then when she was 3 years old, she was diagnosed with autism, severe autism. So along comes our son, and, you know, at this point, we were not thinking about the vaccines at all. I mean, I had heard the story that vaccines might be linked to neurological problems, but I just really dismissed it, you know, like a lot of people do. So for those who, you know, question what I'm saying right now, I completely get it because I was there. I was one of those people. And what was really interesting and opened my eyes to all of this was what happened to my son. So my son, for reasons unrelated to autism, we had him on a hypoallergenic milk formula till he was about 15 months old, and then it gets kind of expensive, so, you know, we switched back to the regular cow's milk formula. And I actually took my son to his 18-month checkup with his pediatrician. And because I had given the pediatrician the hell that I thought she'd missed something at my daughter's 6-month checkup, my son got a full developmental checkup, passed with flying colors, had 15, 20 words, looking appropriately, everything's great, gets his shots. 3 days later, my wife says to me, you know, Ben isn't talking anymore. And I just thought, oh, my God. And he'd started to pound his head on the floor. And I just said to myself, wait a minute, he was fine. And then just, it was like a light went off in my head, and I said, the vaccines. And luckily, by the grace of God, within a couple days of that happening, I ran across his great book called Unraveling the Mystery of Autism, and it was about the gluten casein-free diet. So we put both kids on that diet immediately. Didn't really do much for my daughter except provoke constant tantrums. But after 12 days, my son said his first word again. And it was like we caught him as he was falling into the abyss of autism. My wife's a speech therapist. She's a trained observer. So she always says it seems like it took about a year for him to catch up in language with his peers. It took about 2 years for his sensory problems to go away. But he entered kindergarten as normally developing five-year-old, and he's 16 years old now. He's on the track team. He's a great athlete. He's got a great sense of humor. He's just a monster in the weight room. And I have a daughter who, you know, has trouble walking and is very weak and still can't speak. So, you know, to have something so dramatic happen, you know, that was one of those, you know, moments in life where I just said, okay, God, I guess you showed this to me, and you know, I'm going to fight this thing if necessary for the rest of my life to get to the bottom of this and get the truth out there. So that's where it really started for me.
That's amazing, and your children are so lucky to have parents like they have. What you just
well,
for your son,
you know,
we're
kind of lucky financially that we can do it, and I just think of all the parents who. You know, don't have either the financial resources or family backing, or, you know, the marriage is split up and, you know, one parent is left caring for these very disabled children. And so, you know, I'd like to think I'm a spiritual person, and someday I'm going to meet my creator, and, you know, he's going to ask me, mm-hmm. what did you do in this battle? And, you know, I hope to have a halfway decent answer. So my activism has been, you know, a response to that, and just, you know, trying to make the world a better place, a more honest place.
Incredible. So why is this book about inoculation and autism so important at this time?
Well, I think that a lot of people and a lot of your listeners probably who are listening to this will say, you know, we've heard this story, you know, give us something new rather than just parental stories. And what happened in the summer of 2014 is a scientist named Dr. William Thompson, who worked in the Immunization Safety Office of the CDC, came out with claims that the CDC had covered up information in a 2004 publication looking at the rates of autism among children who got the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine early. So let me go through kind of what this study was. There was a natural kind of study that could take place because prior to 2002-2003, the MMR vaccine was given after 36 months, okay? So you had a whole bunch of data on children who'd gotten the vaccine at 36 months, basically 3 years, which is when we really think the immune system starts to work effectively. But then there is a recommendation that children get the MMR shot earlier so they could get it at 24 or 18 months. So there was this kind of natural, you know, science experiment going on. A whole bunch of kids who'd gotten the MMR vaccine at 36 months and beyond, and those who'd gotten it before. So the CDC actually put together a really good research plan to study this question. Then they gathered the data, and then they looked at it, and they were shocked by what they had found. What they had found specifically is that the African-American males had about a 3.4-fold increase in rates of autism among the earlier group versus their peers. They also found that there was another group that had about a 2.4-fold increase, a group that they called isolated autism, which the rest of the sane world just calls normally developing children. And so this was dramatic. And, you know, I have to say, this wasn't even a really good scientific study because it was just looking at children who got the MMR vaccine at 36 months and those who got it before. It's kind of like studying rates of lung cancer among different groups, and you have one group that smokes two packs of cigarettes a day and another group that smokes one pack of cigarettes a day. A really good scientific experiment has a control group that's not exposed to that. So, you know, we understand that a really good study would have been to have those two groups and then a group that didn't get the MMR vaccine or weren't vaccinated. But despite that, there was this increased risk of autism from earlier administration of the MMR shot. And what the scientists at the CDC did, according to Thompson, was they threw away that data. Now, they actually got together on a Saturday afternoon at the CDC to throw all the computer files and all the printed files into a garbage can. Thompson felt that that was probably illegal, so he kept all of the electronic records. He was also in charge of kind of data entry, and he was their computer person in addition to being their statistician. And he sat on it for all that time. He really tried to work inside the CDC to get this information out. He was blocked. He was actually, you know, brought up, you know, on a complaint. And, you know, letters of complaint are in his file, and I have them in my book. But, you know, and I wish in 2003, 2004, he'd gone to, like, the New York Times or some organization, but he didn't. But starting in 2013, he started to reveal this information to another scientist, Dr. Brian Hooker, who's a college biology professor at Simpson University in Northern California. And eventually he turned whistleblower, turned over more than 10,000 documents to the office of Congressman William Posey out of Florida, and applied for and was granted federal whistleblower protection. So in writing this book, what I did was talk not only to Dr. Brian Hooker, I also talked to Dr. Andy Wakefield, who had first raised concerns about the about the MMR vaccines, and then I applied to the office of Congressman Posey for access to these documents, and I was granted access to these documents. So for those who say, you know, I'm a conspiracy theorist, all I can say is, well, you know, I applied to Congress to look at documents turned over by a federal whistleblower. I read the documents, and then I wrote about what was in them.
Oh, this is just so amazing. It's mind-boggling. And you're not the only person talking about this. I mentioned before we started that I attended an event called The Truth About Cancer that was held in Texas, and there were many people talking about the effects of vaccines and autism.
You had mentioned my previous book, Plague, that I co-written with Dr. Judy Mikovits, who came to this as a cancer researcher. And so what, you know, she believes is that these vaccines are essentially causing the immune system to be dysregulated and to work in all sorts of inappropriate ways and exhaust themselves, really, doing things that they don't need to do. And one of the long-term consequences of the immune system not working really well is cancer. So, you know, I'm looking at the effect on children and things like autism and neurological disease and, you know, these incredible rates of childhood diabetes and obesity and everything. But the long-term consequences are, you know, dramatic increases in cancer as the population ages, and also things like dementia and Alzheimer's. One of the things that Dr. Thompson asked his colleagues at the CDC to look at after he'd worked on vaccines and autism was he wanted to look at vaccines and the rate of Alzheimer's among the elderly, and he was denied permission to look at that data. And, you know,
wow.
I believe that science has a sacred obligation to tell the truth without fear or favor. You know, that's what it's supposed to do. That's why people love it. And the problem is that science right now is set up as this incredibly, you know, authoritarian hierarchy where, you know, the truth comes from the top and everybody down below follows it. And when you have people at the very top line, it's not surprising that, you know, that the truth doesn't get out there. And so what I'm saying is the people at the very top are lying about this, just like they lied about, you know, mercury and autism, which I cover in the book as well. And so you had really two investigations into vaccines and autism. They lied in both of these studies, and then in 2004, based on those two phony studies, they said we're not going to spend any federal dollars investigating the questions of vaccines and autism. So we've really been behind the eight ball for the past, you know, 13 years because science isn't doing its job to protect the public. And, you know, why I titled the book How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism is because that's what I absolutely believe. Science is supposed to help humanity. It's supposed to help make us healthier and more prosperous, and it's been captured by these interests which are not serving the public.
And so why do you think this is happening? Why are they suppressing this information? I mean, they have children,
you know,
also. They have bodies that could be injured by vaccines.
It's a great question, and I've struggled with that. You know, how can you do that? And all I can say is that and I get this from the documents where the scientists talk among themselves. For example, I mentioned mercury and autism. Well, the CDC did a study on this, and before they released the study, they had a big conference at a place called Simpsonwood Retreat Center in Georgia. It's off campus from the CDC, so they thought it wouldn't be subject to a Freedom of Information Act request. And to read the transcripts of this two-day meeting with over 50 top scientists from government, academia, and from industry, but no consumer groups were allowed there, is just to kind of get a window into their philosophy, which is they believe that vaccines are so important that any negative things about vaccines need to be suppressed and massaged. And, you know, I just find that so contrary to the spirit of science. And it's just, I liken it to any large corporation or any large organization. You know, why did the Catholic Church suppress information about pedophiles among its priests? Well, they did it because mm-hmm. they said, oh, we can't do that. You know, people will turn away from us. Well, they turned away in greater numbers when they found you covered it up. You know, same thing with Wall Street. You know, can we, you know, are the banks sound? Well, we can't say that because then people will turn away from us. Well, it's going to be, the more you hide it, the worse it's going to be. So, you know, I really think that these, you know, people at the CDC have brought this on themselves.
Right. And there are people that could prevent the future problems. So you said, something about Dr. Andy Wakefield. Talk about him and what happened with him, who he is.
Yeah, so Dr. Andy Wakefield is a British researcher. He comes from four generations of doctors and physicians. And in 1998, he published a case series, which was approximately 12 children whose parents said that their development of autism was linked to the MMR vaccine. They also had significant gastrointestinal problems after the vaccine. So he went and did some research on it. He scoped them with, standard tests. You get a sample of, inflamed tissue in the gut, and then he gene sequenced it and found that the measles virus was persisting in their gut. And when he did further analysis, he found that it was the vaccine strain of the measles that, they'd gotten the shot 3 to 4 years earlier. And, the measles virus should have cleared from these kids years earlier, so it shouldn't have been there. And he just said there should be further research on this. He was viciously attacked. He was subject to an amazing legal proceeding in the British medical system, at which none of the parents were brought in to say, "Hey, we really like what he did," and he was the only one who would look at it. And for those people who claim that Wakefield faked his research, I just want them to go to the trial transcript. You'll find no claim that he faked any of his research. The only thing that they were able to say was that he subjected children to unnecessary medical procedures, and yet they were the standard medical procedures at the time. So even if you say, Wakefield shouldn't be believed, it's like, well, wait a minute. Even the trial transcript doesn't say he shouldn't be believed. What it says is he didn't have authority to do those tests. And that just sounds like a crazy, crazy thing to me. So, and Andy Wakefield has long maintained that he did have proper certification to do that. And what was really interesting is in his initial trial, he was actually tried with two other of his co-researchers, one of whom was also found guilty, Dr. John Walker Smith. And John Walker Smith, even though he was removed from medical roles as well, and even though he was 8 years past retirement, John Walker Smith wouldn't let that stand. And so he actually got his insurance company to agree to fund an appeal. And John Walker Smith was cleared of all charges. And what's really interesting is what they essentially claimed was that Wakefield was in a conspiracy to do this kind of stuff. So now Wakefield finds himself in this really weird situation where he's in a conspiracy with himself. And, there were, 12 other researchers who did a lot of the research on that initial study. So it really is just this idea that we can't say anything negative about vaccines. And, that's just not science. There may be a way to do these things safely, but when you're not even willing to study it, I don't understand how the public can have any faith in vaccines.
And as you're talking, I mean, when I grew up, we got the measles and the mumps, and we didn't have vaccines to not get them. We just went through them. They were childhood diseases.
Yeah, and so, going a little bit far afield from what I did in Inoculated, because I really stick to the documents. I go in and I interview people like a senior judge on the vaccine court. Most people don't understand that you can't actually sue a vaccine manufacturer. You have to apply to the federal government. It's got all these weird rules. And, the vaccine judge said, the system isn't working. I interviewed a Stanford law professor who'd studied the vaccine court. She said it's not working, and, none of the parents are happy with the vaccine court as well because it's a bizarre system. So, I say, maybe vaccines have a place, but when you're not willing to study them, and these are things that are being injected into our children, it's appalling to me. It's appalling to me that, a toaster oven that may, catch fire and burn down your kitchen, you have more rights to ask questions of the company that made your toaster than you do of the pharmaceutical company that is putting, these vaccines into your children's bloodstream. I mean, we should have a higher level of, rigor and questioning of our of our medical products than we do our consumer products.
It's just amazing to hear this, and I am sure that many people hearing this will be in kind of disbelief.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that's I really wrote the book Inoculated for those people who may have heard this story and they haven't quite known what to believe. You know, maybe they've got family members who, you know, for the first time in their life, you know, they're saying things that, you know, strike them as like, oh, my God, have they suddenly gone crazy? And you know, we haven't gone crazy. We're just dealing with this. We're looking at the evidence, and we're seeing that these questions are not being asked. And, you know, I describe Inoculated as basically the autism Watergate story. You know, for many years, people didn't like Richard Nixon and thought he was corrupt and everything, but they really didn't have good evidence. And then along comes Watergate, and, you know, even Nixon's strongest defenders had to say, yeah, this guy is corrupt. Well, the revelations of this whistleblower are the autism Watergate story. And, you know, I did a job that any good investigative journalist could have done. Any good investigative journalist, CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox, MSNBC, could have applied to the office of Congressman William Posey, could have gotten these documents, could have done the same job that I did, and probably done a better job than I did. But nobody has been doing the job, so, you know, I figured somebody had to do it, so I would do it.
And there may have been others along the way who wanted to do it and got threatened or stopped in some way.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because I cover a lot of those stories. So, for example, one of the stories told by Robert Kennedy Jr. is when he was doing his Rolling Stone article on the Simpsonwood Conference looking at mercury and autism. He worked very closely for several weeks with Jake Tapper of CNN to verify everything that he was saying in his Rolling Stone article. And lo and behold, 3 hours before broadcast of Tapper's story, Tapper allegedly calls Kennedy and says, corporate killed the story. And apparently Tapper had never had anything like that happen in his life. But, you know, he then got back on the reservation and, you know, Kennedy couldn't get, you know, him to return a phone call. So we've seen Allison Camerota, who is at Fox and at CNN, you know, has done some good stuff and then been told she can't cover it. But the only journalist today who's really doing a good job on this is Cheryl Akeson, who is a former CBS investigative reporter for Katie Couric and now has her show called Full Measure. She's been just great on it. So I encourage anybody who, you know, may not believe me, you know, to check out things that Cheryl Akeson has written on vaccines and autism and this very whistleblower case.
It's very sad that we have people in higher positions that don't want the truth to come out.
Yeah, but, you know, I encourage your listeners, if you kind of question what I'm saying, I know a lot of people will be concerned about the power that the oil companies have over our discourse on things. But the fact of the matter is that the pharmaceutical companies spend twice as much money lobbying Congress as the oil companies. And just watch any evening news broadcast, and I just want you to sit there for half an hour and count the number of pharmaceutical ads you see in that half an hour, and you will understand the power that the pharmaceutical companies have over what we, the American public, see.
Wow. It's just, it's eye-opening. There's something that wanted to ask about. It's going backwards, but I forgot to ask you about a special 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. Just tell us about that, because that's a long time ago, 1986, and that must have had an effect on what happened later on.
One of the things that is kind of surprising to people is that in 1986, President Reagan signed into law the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which took childhood vaccines out of the traditional civil court system and put them in this special vaccine court with rules and evidence, you know, which no honest consumer advocate would ever agree to okay? What was really interesting is Reagan's own Justice Department urged him to veto it, and that opinion was written by then Assistant Attorney General John Bolton, who later became U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, and supposedly is going to get a new post in the Trump administration, but we'll see what happens. But what was really interesting is actually when Reagan signed it, in his signing statement, is he said, "I am signing this law with significant reservations about its constitutionality because I don't think it has a proper system of checks and balances." And he urged Congress to fix those problems, you know, in its next session, but they never did. So I find myself saying, you know, why is it, you know, what mass psychology experiment is being run on us that, you know, shows that when this law was signed, it was controversial. The Justice Department actually urged it be vetoed, and even the president who signed it said he had significant reservations about it and that it should be fixed. And so fast forward 31 years, and we're looked at as crazy people, and I say, well, have you read the history of this thing? You know, and that's why I take some time also to interview one of the judges of this vaccine court who, you know, tells me all the reasons why it's not working. I interview a Stanford law professor who studied the court, who says pretty much the same thing. And I really think that all of this has been created by this very bad 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. And if vaccines were returned to the traditional civil court system, we would start getting answers. And, you know, I think that the court systems are set up to answer these questions, but vaccines are not allowed to be in the traditional civil court system. So, you know, we're really stymied in that. So, you know, I encourage people to say, let's get rid of that law, return vaccines to the regular civil justice system, and we'll start getting answers. And I don't think that's a radical thing to say.
No, but it sounds like there's a financial issue here, and that if the pharmaceutical companies have all the money, they can stop people from standing up against this.
But
it requires a strong grassroots effort.
It really does require a grassroots effort. But, you know, when I tell people that there's a special court and, you know, it has these really funky rules, and there's sort of a cognitive dissonance there. But once people understand it, I mean, they don't get swayed the other way because the injustice of it becomes really clear to them. So, you know, there was just a recent study, you know, asking, you know, do people believe these crazy theories? And it was really interesting because they found out that about 31% of Trump voters believe that vaccines are linked to autism, but also surprisingly about 19% of Clinton supporters believe that vaccines are linked to autism. So, you know, I put those two numbers together and it's about 25% of the population believes that vaccines are somehow connected with autism. And I find myself saying, well, gee, you know, the African-American population is about 11% of the population. And, you know, we make sure that we talk about injustices in that community. And we got 25% of the population that believes something that has, you know, absolutely zero coverage on our mainstream media. This can't continue. And it's amazing to me that 25% number exists in light of this complete media blackout that has happened for parents like me who say simple things like, hey, I got these documents from Congress and I read them and I wrote about them. And this whistleblower is waiting to be called by the House Government Oversight and Reform Committee, and he's been sitting on his hands for 2 years now.
Wow. So what final words would you like to share with our listeners about this enormous topic, this issue?
Well, you know, the thing is, I think that your listeners have probably had people that they care about who have said similar things to what I'm saying. And, you know, maybe some of your listeners have responded in ways that, you know, they're proud of. And maybe some of them, you know, after listening to me, have said to themselves, wow, Maybe I should have listened more to that person. And for those people, I really encourage you, just go on to Amazon, get my book, read it. My wife tells me I've finally written a book that doesn't require a PhD to read. So,
That's great.
Yeah. So, get it and read it. There's no harm in reading things and exposing yourself to ideas that, you may have, previously thought of were crazy. Like I said, when this happened to my first kid, I just thought I had a bad run of genetic luck. But when I saw it happen so dramatically to my second child, it changed my mind and changed my life.
It's just so amazing. So much for sharing this important information with us today.
Good. Thank you so much for having me. I've just loved how the radio hosts have been so open to this message. So you are doing the job the mainstream media is not, and I applaud you for it.
Thank you. It's so important and so hidden. It just has to be out there.
Yep.
So thank you again for your willingness to get out there and do all the work to get the word out about this. And to write these incredible books. So
thank you for
your host, Dr. Thank you so much. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond and Be Healthy and Happy. And if you're ready to create lasting love, I have these 30 lessons for your soul, love lessons. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.